Yeah, so I'm interested in this particular realm. I'm an economist, so I'm definitely an outsider to public health, and was not taught, trained as a health economist. But I got involved in this project back in 2009, 2010, working for the Pennsylvania Department of Health, basically because they had some data that they wanted to have analyzed and didn't know somebody to do it, and I lucked my way into having access to this very nice data set. And then the people at... I don't have anything to disclose. Sorry. So let's just get straight to why I did this in the first place. What I noticed when I started talking to PE teachers and coaches, what they just don't believe BMI at all. They just don't trust it, right? And they all say, look at me, I'm a coach. I'm either overweight or obese according to BMI, and yet I'm clearly not. And I'm teach my best students are the same way. And so the reason for this, of course, is that muscle is more dense than fat, and so athletes tend to have more muscle mass, and they tend to have higher BMIs than similarly situated non-athletes. There's only one study that I know of who's actually looked at this directly, and this is a group out of Great Britain led by Neville, who looked at the British Olympic athletes and did crossover between BMI as a as an indirect measure and more direct measures of adiposity, and they found for these Olympic athletes the bias is between 20% and 40%. It's really quite large. Okay, but I thought, well, maybe by massaging enough data, we could actually come up with an indirect measure of how big the bias is amongst young people. And so this is the data that the distribution of how the data is that I was working with. You'll notice that there are more 7th graders than 6th graders and 8th graders, but nonetheless I had a more than 1,000 of each sex by grade. This data set's a little more than 9,000 once I kind of cut it down. 31 schools, and what you see happening is, with respect to BMI percentile, you see BMI percentile dipping modestly and then moving back up for both males and females. The opposite, of course, is occurring for BMI, which doesn't control for age. It's not at all surprising that BMI is increasing across grades for these students. With respect to the physical fitness activities, the metrics, we see kind of more of a linear increase in physical activity. These are median performance, and this table actually forms the basis for the partition that I'm going to use in order to define fit. But it's more nonlinear for males. And you see, of course, with each one of these three metrics that men at any males at any grade level are outperforming females at the same grade level. So what I did was I decided to use median performance, sex by grade adjusted, and then create a partition of behavior according to where every individual student fit relative to their median performance for that sex by grade person. And so what you see here is, if cell membership were random, since you have 8 cells in the partition, every cell would have 1/8 or 12.5%, and quite clearly that's not happening. So we have people, students, both males and females, being good at or bad at multiple dimensions, especially all 3 mile push-ups and curl-ups versus mile push-ups and curl-ups on the other side, where you have high peaks in performance or lack of performance on multiple events. Okay, kids are good at more than one thing at once, typically. So this is just cell frequency. The top point is taking a look at the cell average BMI percentile and then subtracting off the gender average for that same sex. And what you see is, you know, clear systematic behavior across the partition becoming more and more lean as you have higher performance on the various metrics. And if you look at the different events, mile run clearly beats up on everything else. Mile run is very predictive of having lower BMI percentile as well. Statistically significant in 7 out of the 8 situations. The next best in terms of BMI percentile reduction is push-ups. And I didn't do a separate slide, but if you did the third one, which is this, then you see for curl-ups, it's not nearly as impressive the amount of BMI reduction you get from just being in the higher half of curl-ups alone. So anyway, what I defined as fit, using this very loose measure, is if you were fit on all three events, if you had above median performance on all three events, you were called in the fit eighth. If you were above median performance on push-ups and mile run, I call that the fit fourth. And we clearly see that there are BMI differences, BMI percentile differences, but we don't see from that average what the actual distribution across the BMI spectrum is, and this is what that looks like. So the upper panel is BMI percentile five unit wide bins, so average performance, average proclivity would be 5% because there are 20 bins. And you notice that up to about 70%, they're undersubscribed. This is for both males and females. And it gets worse as we go to the overweight and even worse, the obese. And females, if you look at male versus female differences, females tend to have higher overweight than males, but males tend to have higher obese than females. But the interesting thing is that if you now look at the fit subsamples, both the fit 8 and fit 4th, you see that they are not bunched down in the lower end of the BMI percentile spectrum. In fact, it's still nonlinear and bunched, and it's skewed towards the upper half of the spectrum. And you see that fully 5%, where's that thing? I don't know how to use this either, but red? Fully 5% here are obese, and yet they're in the fit fourth and fit eighth. They're doing above, you know, median. They're in the top half of all three events. And then more than that, 6 and 7%, are sitting here in the what we would call overweight area, according to the CDC. Okay, so this is a large and ugly table, but I'm going to try to break it down for you a little bit by looking at this. Okay, what I want to do is try to explain how I'm going to get at the idea of athletic bias here, or fitness bias here. And so what I did was to try to predict across the sample the level of BMI or BMI percentile as a function of performance on the three events, as well as age, which allows me to do within cohort and then separate grades 7 and 8, each of those, of course, relating back to the sixth graders, which are my base of comparison. And then the final thing, the fit fourth, is just a dummy variable saying, hey, you're in or you're not in this that partition. And the reason I chose fourth rather than eighth is because if we look backwards, there was really no difference between the fourth and the eighth in terms of fit fourth versus fit eighth. Okay. So what do these linear quadratic terms mean? Well, it just means that the silhouettes are curved, right? And so if we look at marginal performance changes, okay, the what happens in terms of expected BMI as a function of a unit increase in curl-ups, you'll notice that diminishes for curl-ups, and it diminishes for push-ups. There are diminishing returns to higher performance for both of those activities. On the other hand, for mile, increased performance is going in the other direction, and so you notice that the purple guy, the high-performance one, is steeper than the green one. Okay, so we have increasing returns to increased performance for mile run. All right, so that's just what the data is telling us. And I'm going to play with that a little bit more. What I want to do is to try to be able to compare across activities. And so in order to compare apples and apples, I decided to start everybody at the same place. So they start, this is the female regression that's being shown here. I'm starting everybody at the median performance level for females, 31 curl-ups, 8 push-ups, or 11.58 for the mile. And then saying, what if we had a one standard deviation increase in performance? All right, so we can have apples to apples. Well, that's the horizontal segments, and then the vertical, of course, is the important thing from the point of view of looking at the effect on BMI or on BMI percentile. And these vertical differences, that's the expected change in BMI percentile for a person who starts at the median performance level but then has an increase in performance of a standard deviation. All right? And you see that by that description, we have mile run clearly much more important than curl-ups, but somewhat more important than push-ups. The numbers 0.6, 6, 5, 2, and 1, 2 are the expected change in BMI, or the logistic of BMI. And so this is exactly how I created this table. I did exactly the same thing for all other parts of the table, for the other three regressions. And looking at physical activity, the first three events, the first three scenarios, things to compare. And then the next three are age-related, so one half year older. So an old kid in a grade versus a median kid or average kid in a grade. Or a seventh grader versus a sixth grader. Or a eighth grader versus a sixth grader. Okay, and that's what those second three comparisons, the open diamonds, are. And what we see is amongst physical activities, the same performance rankings exist regardless of whether you're talking about males or females in terms of just overall, which is the most important, mile, push-ups, curl-ups. Okay. But by sex, if you look at the variation in the ability to change BMI, you'll notice that males are more impacted by mile. These right here are lower than that. That is lower than that. That is lower than that. But the reverse is true for curl-ups. For curl-ups, okay, right there. And push-ups dead equal for both sets. Okay, same impact. For age, we see modest declines in BMI percentile. For BMI, we see increases, which is what you'd expect because BMI doesn't control for age. Okay. But the thing that I was interested in, the fit fourth, the impact varies by sex, but it's large. It's pretty good size. So you take and compare the size of, where's my little red thing? I've got the wrong thing. That, the size of that versus the average of these, or the size of that versus the average of these, the size of that versus the average of these, and so on. you see that the size of the fit fourth coefficient is about exactly the same size as the one standard deviation impact for males and about 60% for females. So it's pretty good size. Now, next thing we have to do is to try to interpret those coefficients and the problem. When you are working with a limited dependent variable, you need to transform it in order to have it not shoot outside the range. And so in order to interpret it, you need to unzip it. And so that's what I'm doing right here. So the top row here, these are just the coefficients and the standard and the confidence intervals. Then you multiply it times the scaling factor. And I said, so imagine we're talking about a borderline overweight kid, somebody who's at 85. Okay. Well, at 85, this is the function you use to undo that logistic transform. So if you're multiplying 85 times 15 divided by 100 is 12.75. You multiply that times the coefficient, and that gives you the expected change in BMI that is associated with just being good at multiple events, what I'm calling being physically fit. Okay. Or if we put it in terms of percentages, you see that that 81.9 is to me a better description of where that person's BMI is if for a female, or 79.4. Nominally, they're at 85. That's what the growth charts say. But if we adjust it, we should really say it's 79. It's not, you know, all the way back, but it's around 3.5% for women. And about 6.5% for men, and you can do exactly the same calculation, really a simpler calculation. No need to do anything kind of weird if you're just working with BMI as the dependent variable, because all you need to do then is just divide by the BMI in order to get a percentage change associated with being in the fit fourth. And we see a lot of consistency here between this one and this one. And this and this, they're all reasonably in the same ballpark. Okay. So I've already talked about some of that. This is just the way we want to think about it, is that we have students who are being told your BMI is 85, but it'd be better to think of your BMI as about 82 or 85 versus 79. And there's a percentage thing we already talked about. Sorry. I'm not very much with PowerPoints. So BMI is not a direct measure of adiposity. It correlates with direct measures, but there are some problems. We know of the problem for elite athletes, but if we are going to be using this measure, which is used for a good reason, it's much cheaper and easier to obtain than any of the other measures, the more direct measures. We might want to tell students or tell parents, if they're getting report cards, these BMI report cards that are coming home in many states at this point, if we could provide some kind of caveat saying, your child has a high BMI, but are they physically active? If they really can do these things, and we can give dimensions as to what cutoffs might be, then there's no problem, or at least there's not as much of a problem as that number seems to suggest. And if we did that, then maybe coaches and PE teachers would no longer think that BMI was a problem. And that's it.